Hello and welcome to another Cake Wolf's Happy Hour. I am your host, Cake Wolf. I am joined here with a slew of other peoples. I am here with Mr. Dust Brain.
Hey.
Miss Dust Bunny. And Miss Cake Bitch.
Hello.
I am also here with my tiny chihuahua, who I am trying to coax into silence with a bit of salmon jerky. So hopefully that keeps her quiet.
It won't.
Salmon.
Yeah, salmon.
You may find me for saying Flowmobile.
So we are a horror game show review podcast on some weeks. And then on other weeks, we do whatever the hell we want. So we've got
the
game show review coming at you every other week. And from here on out, after you hear the game show, we're going to throw something random at you. The next one that we're going to be doing is going to be Cake Bitch and I talking about mimps. If you know what mimps are, you are cool. And if you don't, well, I'll educate you. They are the Monster in My Pockets toys from Matchbox.
And I know nothing about them either.
Yes, so we will go ahead and dig into all about the Monster in My Pockets in the next show. And from there on, it's going to be, game show and then something random and game show and something random. One of those times we're going to actually play the match game. Pick this up from an episode of Monsters, which is a horror anthology. The show had an episode called The Match Game, where basically a bunch of kids lit a match one at a time. The person with the lit match would tell a part of a story till the match would die, and then the other person would light a match and continue the story and so on and so forth till the matchbook runs out.
Yeah, it's not the match game, like the kind where you get a date at the end.
No.
It's a different match game.
Yes.
That's why I was very confused when you said we were going to play the match game.
Well, this is a horror podcast, so if you would win the match game where you would go on a date with somebody at the end, it would have to be something horrific.
Yeah?
Yeah, like they'd have to go on a date with me. Yeah, and they'd have to pay for themselves.
Well,
and
I'm like willingly, I willingly did that a few times.
That would be horrifying, but that's not what we're here to talk about. Not my love life, because it's non-existent at this point. I'm too far in the hole. We would appreciate you guys to find us on the iTunes by looking up the Padded Room Podcast. We circulate within their own little realm there, and if you give them a 5-star rating and a positive review, we will look good, and you'll continue hearing us. And Mr. Darian Brock from the Padded Room Podcast, who we circulate under, won't castrate us or humiliate us on his own show, hopefully. So, good on ya if you gave us a 5-star and said nice things. We like that. As always, we will be building a cake here today, and if you are joining us for the first time, you've never listened to our show before, what I mean by building a cake is basically we've got our icing, which is a getting to know your hosts and what they've been doing in horror lately, and then we are going to move into a song that is relative to the film that we are going to do our game show review on. And then we're going to hit you with the rules of the show and go into the game show. And that's going to be our filling. At the end, we've got our crumbs, which is a wrap-up, final thoughts, ratings of the movie that we watched, and a bit of goodbyes. So that's what you're in for. If that doesn't sound good to you, I don't know what to tell you, because that's pretty much the law that we've laid down here for the Cake Wolf Happy Hour for today. But if you would like to voice your opinions on having us do something different or just calling us a piece of shit, you are welcome to follow us on Twitter at TweetCakeWolf. On Facebook, you could just search CakeWolf, find us on there. I can't imagine there's too many jerks on there that call themselves CakeWolf.
There is one other person, actually.
Oh, really?
Every time I search for the page. Yeah.
Well, you'll be looking
for the
one.
The wolf with a cake on its head.
Yeah. We're probably the only ones who have the iconic logo of the wolf with a cake on its head, because that was a creation from Mr. Dustbrain over here. It's his own personal art piece, so that's not something that someone can replicate.
No.
So yeah, good on you for that. Join us there. You can also go to the padded room recreational area, and you can ask to join in, and Mr. Darian Brock will be so kind as to let you join. And what that is that's got the Cake Wolf audience, the Padded Room audience, and the Horror for Dummies audience all rolled into one. It's kind of a little personal feed for all of us to bullshit with the audience and so on and so forth. You can also go to cakewolf.com. I'm throwing a lot of ways for you to communicate with us here. Cakewolf.com is our website, which will have links to a bunch of other social media ways that you can connect to us. You can connect to Dustbrain's Instagram through there, see what he's listening to on Spotify, and find out that he's a horror hipster listening to all that synth music all day.
Whatever.
I love the synth music. It's good stuff. Also, you can write in email kingcakewolf@gmail.com and send us your horror trivia questions. We will post what movie we are going to do the game show on. You can either send us trivia for that movie or any other horror trivia, or just say hello or whatever you like. When you do send us trivia, you will get raffle tickets. You'll get more if you stump us, but regardless, you're getting some. And that's going to put you into entry for our quarterly drawing. This quarter, we are drawing for a winning of a Rob Zombie prize pack. And yeah, so you get free stuff just by playing along, and you don't really have to do much. You could ask us basic questions like, what's the size of Dustbrain's genitalia, you know? And I doubt you're going to stump him, but you're still going to get raffle tickets. You know the size of your own genitalia, right?
I never really measured, actually.
Really? No. Okay. Well, they would have stumped you then.
Just you, huh?
Yeah, I have to drug him up before I get the measuring tape out.
You could just give him the measuring tape and he can measure his own.
You want to do it right now? We got some.
No, it's like, stop saying this.
It's felt, so it's not going to cut you. It's like
it's
felt,
it's plastic.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, it's not soft and woolly.
Yeah, so I guess we can go ahead and talk about what we've been doing in horror lately, unless you guys want to chime in with just anything that's been going on in your life lately that you feel the need to brag or complain about. No?
No, I don't have anything. It's been...
Yeah. Everything is just... We're all living in this void. This
haze.
This floating darkness until the Cake Wolf happy hour starts. And then we just... we open our eyes. Yeah. We come into existence. yeah, so I guess we'll do what we've been doing in horror lately. Mr. Dustbrain, would you like to kick it off with some of your board games? How about giving us a Kingdom Death update? If anybody listening has been keeping up with Dustbrain's Kingdom Death game, he's got a character running called Jack Torrance that's been alive forever and has gone through quite a bit of hell.
Yeah, you created that character.
Yeah.
And we've just been playing with him because you can never make it over. But yeah, he's gone through quite a bit. I think he's the oldest survivor in our settlement. We've recently fought the Watcher, which is kind of like an end boss, sort of, because it keeps going after that. But it's, you know, one of the epic fights that you come across, and your dude is so fucked up at this point. I mean, he's got all these mental disorders. He is almost blind, so he's like zero accuracy, but he wields this badass samurai sword, and he rolls like 7 dice. So, like, something's going to hit because you're, like, flailing with this sword.
You don't need skill if you're quick enough, right?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And somehow you have, like, 10 strength or 9 strength, which is, I mean, if you hit, you're going to penetrate anything. It's ridiculous.
I remember.
Is this because he's not playing that he's gotten so good?
It's because he decided to murder our best survivor, and he became the undisputed boss of the settlement.
Well, I feel like that's what Jack Torrance would do, and this is kind of like his adventures after The Shining, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We have a friend named Walter. He's a very lanky kind of dude. And he does not look intimidating at all. I guess maybe now he might, because he's been doing kung fu for a few years, but...
He doesn't go.
No?
No.
Okay, well, years ago, before he ever did martial arts, myself, and a couple of our friends, we would get together for, like, this really stupid teenage fight club thing. And the first time we did it, Walter was there, and everyone's, like, picking who they want to fight. And everyone wants to fight Walter because he's, like, the most, timid-looking person, right? So this one guy goes to up against Walter, and Walter starts off by tearing his shirt off, growling, rubbing dirt all over his bare chest, and then just starts, like, flailing really quickly and running at his opponent. Like, it scared the hell out of the guy, so there was actually no fight.
He's surprised.
He was just flailing so fast. Like, that's what your description of the seven dice reminded me of. It was like Walter just flailing all of his limbs as violently as he can. Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah. Anyways.
With your other games.
Well, yeah, we beat The Watcher, so that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
But other than Kingdom Death, I've been... I played Arkham Horror. I don't think I mentioned this before, but Arkham Horror is... it's a really old game, actually. It was created in 1987 by...
Holy shit.
Richard Lanius. It's one of the classic horror board games. And it's still good. I mean, they still print it today. I mean, it's all... They changed it a bit, and it's got shiny new graphics and stuff. It looks really nice. And it is... I mean, it is really intimidating, because it's got a lot of moving pieces, and it's a lot of randomness, but it's... tells a cool story. I mean, it's Lovecraft in all its glory. I don't know if I'd recommend it for anyone who's not too used to board games, but it's definitely really cool if you can get into it.
I didn't realize that it was from the 80s. I thought this was something that recently came out.
No, this is an old one. Huh. I mean, they've built on top of this, they've created a lot of different spin-offs. Like, they later created Eldritch Horror, which is like kind of a reimagining of it.
Mm-hmm.
With kind of more of an Indiana Jones kind of feel.
Oh, cool.
With Lovecraft. And then they did Elder Sign, which is more of a dice rolling version. They did...
I remember playing a tabletop pen and paper RPG. I don't remember if it was called Arkham Horror, but it was Cthulhu-based, and yeah, this was, like, back in the 90s.
Call of Cthulhu.
Is that what it was?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of Lovecraft Cthulhu games, but this was one of the forefronts, you know, back then.
Mm.
That was really cool. Like I said, I don't know if I'd recommend it for anyone new to board games, but... I've also, I do want to mention a movie I watched. It's not really...
Oh, you watched something?
Yeah, it's not really horror, but it could be considered horror. I don't know. It's too amazing.
Is it horrible?
No.
Okay.
Canon films are a sign of quality.
Oh, canon, yeah.
Canon films. If anyone knows about canon, they produce ridiculous movies. I mean, this... they're absurd in their violence and ridiculousness.
Yeah, Barbarian Brothers is one of the best. They did the Masters of the Universe as well.
So. Yeah. That was awful.
Amazing. Awful amazing.
Awfully amazing.
Well, this movie is called Invasion USA.
I've never heard of this.
I can't believe you haven't watched this. This stars Chuck Norris. It was made in 1985, directed by Joseph Zito. And it's It's so good. There's so much action, explosions, and gunfire.
Does he fight the, like, remember that TV show on Fox with, I think it was called Alien Nation, where the aliens have the, like, they all have the bald head with the, like, cancerous speckles on it?
Yep, Alien Nation. Yeah,
is it Chuck Norris just blowing away those dudes?
I saw that.
Because I'd watch that.
So United States is not a world. It's...
Well, this is actually more about, like, these...
More of a Red Dawn feel?
Cuban-led, like, guerrillas, I guess.
Okay.
It's like, a Red Dawn kind of feel.
They, like, come invade America on these fucking, you know, boats. Looks like fucking, you know, World War. And then they just, like, hijack everything. They just start blowing up shit. They pull out bazookas, like... Every 5 minutes, a bazooka comes out and they start blowing shit up. Like, there's one part of the movie where there's a suburban neighborhood and they make it, it's Christmas time, so they have all these children. Oh,
man. So this could be a Christmas movie that you could watch.
Yeah.
Nice.
You're watching a good slow 3 minutes of them talking about, I want to put the star in the tree. Yeah. And you're following this family. You're getting really into it. And then... What happens?
You just see the guys, and they just pull... I, like, told her, oh, my God, they got to be doing something crazy here. He's going to pull out a bazooka. And he pulls out a fucking bazooka. He starts blowing up all these suburban homes. Like, these aren't miniatures. These are real homes. They blow up all of them.
I can't imagine how they got the clearance for that. Was it a floodplain or what happened? How did they do that?
No, I looked.
Foreclosures.
I looked it up.
It's probably the fact, like, I'm sure, like, Chuck Norris gets so many homes just donated to him by fans because he needs to destroy homes for a living.
Just kicking in doors.
To keep up with his martial arts, his physique. He just starts punching down the concrete. He finds the cornerstones and starts breaking it down with his teeth.
Well, I did look into it, and they would actually go around and find places that would need to get bulldozed. Like, this whole suburban neighborhood was going to get bulldozed anyways to make room for, like, an airfield runway.
Okay.
What?
So they just said, oh, yeah, you guys can fucking blow up the whole thing. Sure.
That's amazing.
They also did this with a mall. They, like, destroyed this mall. I guess they were doing renovations on it. They just said, yeah, go ahead, go to town.
Holy shit. Right. I bet, like, the aftermath of this, like, just the desolate world was probably the planescape they used for the Masters of the Universe. Just because that movie had a lot of scenes that were just dead and devoid of everything. It's probably just the aftermath of Chuck Norris.
Like, this movie doesn't make... It doesn't need to make a whole lot of sense. It's just, like, ramped up to 11, like, ridiculous... Mindless violence.
Nice.
Explosions. I recommend it to anyone.
Well, I have to watch it now.
I know you fell asleep.
As I do.
As we were watching it, but what did you think of what you saw?
It looked like a thrill ride.
From what I saw, Red Dawn.
Yeah, I think that's what they were kind of doing.
That's what I thought too.
On. I mean, maybe it was before the Red Dawn film with, like, the Swayze and
that. Yeah.
But what I did see was a Coke party. A woman just, what happened? Like, something went right through her face and neck.
He just
like slammed her face into something that. She was snorting Coke with a straw, and he just, like, bam, threw her head into the.
So he was, that was like the original Joker scene.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Something happened with the Coke,
too.
Throws her
out the window.
Yeah! Like, that was a little overkill.
Nice.
What happened, like, with the pile of Coke? There was something kind of interesting that happened with that. I forget.
Just all kinds of shady stuff.
Old guy just comes by, he takes, like, a bunch of bags and leaves. They left that scene in of, like, the aftermath. Like, guy kills the two people, and just this old guy coming in, taking bags and leaving.
Oh, man. That sounds like such a good movie.
Just like man front desk. It's my tip.
I need to see that.
It's on Amazon Prime right now.
Nice. Miss Cake Bitch, anything in horror lately?
Well, you reminded me that we watched Cujo.
Yeah, your first weekend. Your first watching of Cujo. One of the.
I'm afraid of rabies.
That might be the movie I watched the most of when I was a kid. It might be. I watched that a lot.
That surprises me too, because like the dog is so dead, and you usually get so angry about dead animals.
Yeah, but I mean,
he has rabies, obviously, but
it's terrifying. It's a terrifying movie.
He was dead. I did notice that it seems like Stephen King movies tend to be like the human will, the power of the human will to get through these things. So that's kind of cool that the horror is really just human survival.
Evil object. Notice that it's like evil car, evil dog, evil hotel.
Well, it was crazy dog. It's a crazy dog. It's angry because a bat bit its nose. So, you know, that doesn't help me get over my fear of bats either.
Well, the way that he writes is more of just a character study kind of thing. He writes stories about people, and the horror is just kind of put over top of that. But at first and foremost, it's a story about a certain type of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was fine.
Which I think lends itself very well to with his style of writing and how it focuses on people. Cujo works so well because he tends to not explain a lot of things when he's making his stories, and when he puts in the very high supernatural elements, you know, it leaves a little bit to want, but you are grounded more in reality with something like Cujo, where you can accept it more as something that could happen to you. And I feel like that's more effective than,
I was like very confused about the fact that the wife was driving around this awful beater car that, like, never worked, and her husband was driving around this, like, super nice convertible. That seemed like a dick move.
Well, that is how things work.
Oh, yeah. I do drive the beater car.
I mean, what? Yeah.
But I park in a tiny parking lot.
It's just
the try to keep mine running.
It's just the way of the world, really. that was a good observation. I never actually picked up on that. I can't remember if that's actually covered in the story at all. But
why she drives the beater car?
Yeah.
He's just angry and wants to keep her at home all the time.
I'm going to have to revisit the novel and see if that's touched on, because that is an interesting observation. So I guess I'll move into what I've been doing in horror lately. I watched The Convent from 2000. This is a Mike Mendez film. And if you guys know him, you kind of know what you're getting into. I feel like this is a little bit on his lesser scale. This definitely fits within the nunsploitation cinema.
I just can't believe that that is a category of movie.
Nunsploitation?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's huge. But it is a low-budget nunsploitation. It's very scary movie-esque, like the parodies to Scream were. It has that feel to it. But it does have a really awesome intro, and if you aren't into nunsploitation and you don't want the goofy cinema aspect that this is going to deliver throughout most of it, you're still really going to enjoy the first 5 minutes of the film, which is basically a teenage girl who is going into a church filled with nuns that are having a prayer, and she goes in there smoking a cigarette, carrying a huge can of gasoline with some shit-kicker boots on and a shotgun. And she proceeds in just pounding the fuck out of all of these nuns with this shotgun while shooting their faces off. And then while they're all lying there suffering, like praying, she douses them all in gasoline and lights them on fire with the cigarette. It's very Tarantino-esque in its execution.
Very Catholic schoolgirl fantasy.
Yeah. The problem that is prominent right from the beginning, even though that is a really cool scene, post-production, I'm guessing there was some issue with financing or something, because the sound doesn't sync up very well with the film, and it's noticeable right from the beginning. They have a cool song playing while she's doing this, but it just doesn't pair well. It's off kilter. It's more quiet than it needs to be. And if you can get beyond that kind of stuff and that low budget feel, I feel like you're going to enjoy yourself. But it is scary movie-esque, so be prepared for that. Another one that I checked out was The Other Hell from 1981. This is another nunsploitation, and I would not recommend this one except for fans of nunsploitation. It's definitely a slow burn with lots of exposition, but it does have moments that are cringeworthy, including a nun who throws a baby into a boiling pot of water. So that's pretty fun. the film does understand a great deal. It gives a lot of attention to detail, and I appreciate the mostly realistic mood for this satanic tale. Also watched The Collection, 2012. I feel like Josh Stewart as Arkin reprising his role once again. This is a sequel to 2009's The Collector. And Arkin plays a convincing, if not cartoonish at times, hard-boiled criminal that would feel right at home in a Richard S. Prather novel. So that this is like I said, the sequel to 2009's The Collector, and I feel like this next installment follows the ideology that a sequel must have more. Basically, every time you get a sequel, like especially with the Hatchet movies, they're constantly upping the ante and giving you tons more body count. Look at the Saw movies. Pretty much any franchise does this. So the Collection has more gore, a lot more gore, and it opens up like a routine PG-13 schlocky horror film, which kind of sets you off pace at the beginning. But we're getting a group of teenage kids that are basically in the stages of learning what a PP and a vagina is. But
not teenagers.
But this quickly gets turned on its head as the group goes into a secret club with probably close to 100 others that are doing what teenagers do. They're dancing and doing drugs and whatnot. And then a giant corn harvester thing comes down from the ceiling and just shucks the majority of them to pieces. It's super fucking gory. And from that point, it just does not let up. We're also getting a group of mercenaries fighting against the Collector. And we get to see what the Collector does with the things and people that he collects. We get to see his home. This is fighting on his home turf and people invading his place rather than in the first one. He's going into other people's homes, setting up the traps and collecting them. It seems pretty obvious that they're trying to turn him into a horror icon. And if you take this movie seriously, I feel like it's blowing its load too soon for that to become a reality. But the movie does have a very surprising twist at the end that kind of makes a lot of the ridiculousness of this movie somewhat redeemable. I will tell you this, though. All the scary that The Collector had in its first film is completely destroyed in this sequel. The sequel takes the teeth away from The Collector and makes him a parody of high-kill gore fests like what's seen in Hatchet 3. Have any of you ever seen either of The Collector movies? A dude that wears the, like, strange stretched black leather mask.
I think I watched the first one, but I don't remember anything about it.
It's basically like somebody watched the Batman movies and said, hey, what if Batman was a serial killer? And
okay.
Yeah, it's basically like he's great at, he's like at the physical peak of human perfection. He knows tons of martial arts. He has a ton of gadgets and he's a tactician. It's crazy. The similarities to Batman are completely crazy.
Without it's, that goody-goody angle.
Right. He's just so cute. Fucking foul. The first movie actually makes you afraid of him. It does a very good job at that, and it's a very tense and claustrophobic film. The second one, like I said, is just nuts. All over the place. As Christina mentioned, Miss Cake Bitch, I watched Cujo. Still love it. I still think it's a perfect film. Suspiria, picked that up again and watched that. Going to be podcasting with the Resurrection Zombie podcast for Suspiria. And there's a lot of really awesome fun facts about Suspiria that you get to find out when you dig into those special features. So Nicolodi, who Dario Argento met on the set of Deep Red, apparently left a huge impression on him, so he had her in consecutive films of his. And in true fashion, as happens often in the creative field, she came up with a lot of the ideas for his movies, and he did not give her credit. So apparently her grandmother was in a dance school, much like the young girl in Suspiria goes to a dance school. And her grandmother said there were witches there, much like in Suspiria, there were witches there. And she helped him with the script. He didn't give her the proper credit until later on, and he eventually did. And because there was a hassle there, she was hesitant to help him write the sequel, Inferno. And she gave in and helped him write it, and he didn't give her credit. So then she said, okay, I'm going to write the third film, Mother of Tears, your final part in this masterpiece trilogy, but I'm not going to give it to you. And he's like, you'll give it to me, right? Yeah, it'll happen. She never gave it to him, so he had to write it himself. And guess what? Nobody likes The Mother of Tears, and generally the consensus for it is that it's shit. So that makes me wonder about Mr. Argento there. Also, he gave himself very liberal credits in Suspiria that could be argued, like Cherry 25 became Goblin to create the score for Suspiria. They were talked to into changing their name to Goblin by Dario Argento because he thought they needed more of a spooky name for a horror movie doing a composure for it. And so they made their name Goblin, and they did an awesome job at the score for Suspiria. Even if you haven't seen Suspiria, you'll know that tune when you hear it. There's a reason for that, and it's because they took the song "Jesus Loves All the Little Children" and made it fucking evil. I never knew that until then, and also, there's a lot of similarities to I want to stay on course. So Dario Argento gave himself credits on the music. He said that the score was in. He gave himself like a music collaboration with Goblin, which, you know, it's a kind of weird how much credit he took when he had such a stellar amount of talent helping him create this masterpiece, and I feel like he was kind of trying to get more credit for himself than he needed. Anyway, I love his movies. Not saying that he's a bastard, but he might be. But his movies are great.
His movies.
Yes. Yes, it's weird. It's in my head.
Quote, unquote,
right.
His movies.
Yeah.
The movies credited to his name.
Yes.
He also had a lot of inspiration making Suspiria, taking notes from Walt Disney's Snow White, which is why you get the iconic color scheme in Suspiria. Everyone talks about the color. The way that he wanted it to be done was like a live-action 3D version of Snow White, very bright colors. And the way that he was able to do that was he actually wrote it down because I would never remember this. He had an Eastman color stock that allowed him to do adjustments with the colors in post-production by using one of the very last in existent Technicolor printers at the time. So it wasn't actually filmed in Technicolor, but in the post-production they used a Technicolor printer to get that lighting effect that was so iconic. There's a lot that I can go into with this, but if you listen to the Resurrection Zombie 7 podcast, I'm sure you'll hear more BS.
Yeah, don't blow your load here.
Right. Army of Darkness revisited that. Has everyone here seen Army of Darkness, I hope?
No, I haven't. But that's not unusual.
Yeah.
I think that was the first movie my father took me to see in the movie theaters. I
just did that for your look.
I love that movie. Drag Me to Hell. Another Sam Raimi film.
Drag Me to Hell is really good.
Yeah, it's nearly perfect. It's surprisingly amazing for a PG-13 movie. They made it super terrifying and funny at the same time. Plus, Goat Demon, right?
Oh, gotta love that. I thought you were talking about another movie called Goat Demon for a second.
Me too.
I'm like, what?
I'll cut off the movies short. I don't want to keep going on and on. Also, I read a bunch of Stephen King. Want to touch on one of the stories specifically. I read Four Past Midnight, Skeleton Crew, and I am currently reading The Bazaar of Bad Dreams. Really, really loved Four Past Midnight. The four stories in there are Langoliers, Secret Window, The Library Policeman, and Sundog. Two of those movies, or stories, have been turned into films, Langoliers and Secret Window. And Langoliers is actually very true to its story adaptation. It's almost spot on. The description of the monsters in the Langoliers, however, is far more scary than what you're seeing in the actual movie, the bouncing balls with teeth. It's like little mad balls coming at you. But the Secret Window has a far superior ending than the movie itself, and I thought the movie had a decent ending to it, even if it was a little bit late in the game, because that had been played out so much. But Stephen King actually had a very unique take on a Secret Window that the movie did not capture, where it's like an alternate personality in the film. In the story, you're getting an actual entity, an actual thing, a creature, and it's a lot more scary that way. The Library Policeman and the Sundog were not movies, but they definitely should be, especially the Library Policeman, because that is the scariest Stephen King thing I have ever read. It is horrifying. I'm almost through his entire catalog, so I've read most of his stuff. Library Policeman, scariest thing yet. And if you like It and you want to see more of that monster, you can check out the Dark Tower series. In the seventh book, there's a creature called Dandolo that's basically another version of what the creature in the movie or book It is. And the Library Policeman story has a creature in there that is very similar. You could argue that it is one of the creatures that it actually is. They describe it kind of like a vampire in it, in a way, but this is coming from the people that don't know what they're experiencing. And the creature is so similar to the It monster. So if you like that creature, you need to read The Library Policeman. I don't want to tell you anything about it. It's super horrifying, and it catches you off guard because it starts off so fucking simple. But it's intense and it's fucking amazing. One of the best things he's ever done. Sundog. I will tell you about this one a little bit more in depth. Basically, we've got a kid that has a Polaroid Sun camera. Whenever he takes a picture of something, there's a dog that appears in the Polaroid pictures. And, it's always of the same scenery of like this yard with a fence and the dog coming at the person that's taking the pictures, and it keeps getting closer and closer. And it's almost like a possessive kind of thing where it makes you have an addiction to taking the pictures, even though the dog that's coming at you is progressively looking more demonic as it gets closer. And it's just a cool little tale of this this beast in living in this other world that's trying to cross over into ours. Very cool. Definitely got to check that out. I feel like Four Past Midnight was one of the best collection of stories of his that I've come across. So, yeah. I guess I'm not going to go to... I can say other things at another show. we're hitting pretty hard here in the time. So let's go ahead. Yeah, I am. Let me clarify that. Me. Let's do the Are You a Dummy segment. How about that?
Welcome to Australia, cocksucker.
Welcome to Australia, cocksuckers. All right, so if any of you listen to the Horror for Dummies podcast that's released every week on the paddedroom.podbean.com feed, then you'll know the answer to this because they recently covered the movie Scream from 1996, a Wes Craven classic.
I'm always an episode behind. So I never get this.
Well, this is great because I like saying my shitty insults. So, okay, my question for you is... in Wes Craven's 1996 classic Scream, why was Ghostface given a black garb over a white garb?
Because it would look stupid.
Well, that's close.
I feel like that's valid.
But, I mean, you don't actually... You could figure this out if you think about it. You know Ghostface, he's like... got the white face, right? And if you took away all the black cloak and gave him just a white cloak...
Yeah, okay. I see what you're putting yeah. down. Yeah,
say it.
Yeah, he looked like a Klansman.
Yeah. So their original concept was to put it in there because he would look more like a ghost and it would have more of an effect on the blood. But someone pointed out to Wes, like, hey... look at that costume, man. Look what you're making there. So I guess I can't insult you, Mr. Dustbrain, but I will insult the others. You are so stupid, you thought the star of Austin Powers was the serial killer Michael Myers. Yeah.
All right.
So, what an insult. All right, let's hit up our song, and then we are going to come at you with the rules of the game and move into our game show. What we are playing today is Weird Al Yankovic's Like a Surgeon. It's a fact.
retractors.
I suppose we are back, and I guess I'm going to have to go ahead and get into our rules of the game show. So today we are covering the movie Excision from 2012. And
I might add that was a pretty perfect song for this movie.
Yeah, I thought so. So the rules are pretty simple. Basically, we've got 9 questions broken up into 3 categories that are relevant to the film. Because the winner of the last game was Miss Dust Bunny, she is going to be the host of the question section of the podcast. And that's how it's going to go. The winner gives out the questions. They make the questions, then they host the question section. And that's going to give people like me a chance to win my movie of choice. Now, we each pick a movie. And the movie that I had picked was the original Hills Have Eyes. Mr. Dustbrain, what did you pick?
I'm still going with my pick from last time. The original Halloween.
All right. John Carpenter Halloween, Miss Cake Bitch.
Going with Bride of Frankenstein.
Sounds pretty good. We've each got 3 lifelines. One of them is to roll a 4-sided dice and take that many shots to get the question right instead of answering the question. Or you can turn the question around on the host and ask them a question instead. If they get it wrong, you get the points. The points are divided into the 3 categories as they get harder, 10, 20, and 30 points. And I guess those are your rules for the movie Excision 2012. After we're done with the questions, we're going to get into what we thought about the movie, what the movie's all about, yada yada. If you don't want to listen to the game before you watch the movie, go watch the movie and then play the game with us. You can play it with us. You're going to hear buzzing in for each of us. Mr. Dust Brain's buzzer is going to sound like this. My buzzer will sound like this. And Miss Cake Bitches will sound like this. So that's how you're going to know when we buzz in with the answers. And the host is going to give out the first question. They're going to pick the first category and first question. And that's how it's going to roll. Now, I was a bastard and I did skip what Miss Dust Bunny had been doing in horror lately. So let me, before we get into the game show, throw at you what she's been doing in horror lately.
I've been watching a lot of episodes of Monk and Psych because of their complete disregard for human life.
Okay. there's always murder in those, so.
And they seem really happy about it. And we have to just sort of roll with it.
They kind of remind me of the old, like, Columbo. How Columbo had, they all have their own style. Columbo's was basically acting like he was a complete idiot and making the killer so frustrated with him that he would ask these inane questions and he would never go away. He's like a fucking tick. So that they would be like, yes, I fucking killed him. Will just lock me up. Just go get out of my life. Stop. Just get out of my life, Columbo. I hate you. Go away, Columbo. He's like, yeah. That's pretty good detective work. So that's how you can be a detective. Just be a complete shit and annoy them until they give up.
Or be an elderly woman who probably killed them herself in order to get a book deal.
Yeah, Murder, She Wrote. Or Matlock. What was his angle, Matlock?
He was a lawyer.
Yeah, I guess so. He was just creepy looking. So let's go ahead and get into our main course. All right, we are in the filling. So, Miss Dust Bunny, I'm handing the reins over to you.
So how does this work? I give you the title of the category and you pick 10, 20, or 30?
Well, it's going to start off with you picking whichever question from whichever category and throwing it at us, and then we'll buzz in if we have the answer.
Yeah, why don't you read the categories we have?
The categories include Weird Girls, Tracy Lords, and Surgery.
Okay. So what's the what's our first one?
We'll go with Weird Girls for 10.
All right, Weird Girls for 10. Sure.
All right.
How does Pauline want to lose her virginity, and why?
I guess I'll try it. Pauline wants to lose her virginity with the preppy boy. She basically walks up to him while there's like football practice going on or something, and he's with a couple of his friends, and she just comes right out and says, "Hey, I want you to be my first." And she gives him her number and basically has him meet up with her at a hotel room that he orchestrates. She wants to do him specifically because, well, one, he's clean, and two, he is currently seeing a girl that kind of harasses Pauline, and Pauline doesn't like her very much, so it's a little bit of a jab at that girl that she doesn't like.
Specifically, how does she want to lose her virginity?
While she's on her period.
Ding.
Okay. she's kind of
a creepy motherfucker.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a pretty disturbed shot of him, like, horrified once he finds out. Well, he goes down on her.
Yeah.
That's right.
Because she tells him to do it.
Yeah.
Well, there's like a weird emotional scene where, like, well, they try a couple different positions, and then eventually he's on top of her in the traditional missionary, and you get a shot close up on her face, and she's got like some tears going on. She looks a little bit emotional, and then she regains control, because throughout this movie she's always like in control except for that one moment there, and you see a little bit of humanity. But then she has him go down on her, and he gets a face full of blood and runs off screaming, and she gets her normal bitch face back.
I find it odd that his mouth is covered in blood and his teeth are, like, sparkling white. I just thought that was, like, dinner plates white.
All right. No, you pick the category, I guess, next.
Okay, I'll do Weird Girls for 30.
You wanted to do the whole 30?
Yeah.
Okay. The little sister is dying of what disorder?
Who?
Christina.
Cystic fibrosis.
Ding. 30 for Christina. This is not going well for Matt. All right. What category and how many points? We have Weird Girls, Tracy Lords, and Surgery.
Surgery for 20.
Okay. What is Pauline's first excision?
First excision.
Oh, shit.
Is that the dead bird?
You got it! Jason for 20.
And she finds a dead bird on the sidewalk, picks it up in front of the cool girl across the street, and takes it home.
How cool is she if she's jumping rope at that age in the middle of the street?
Hell yeah.
I can judge her for that.
They seem to be growing up in a very conservative neighborhood, though.
That's a weird...
bunch of conservative people. Probably is very risque to be jumping rope if you have breasts.
All right.
Yeah, it's really weird because she, like, she pulls out the intestines and stuff, and then you see her, like, dumping the blood from a bag into the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
And she's How do you get rid of your intestines?
She was rubbing the blood on her mouth, too.
Yeah, she was drinking it.
She was tasting it with her fingertips, yes.
Yeah.
And then she rinsed her mouth out with mouth rinse, mouthwash.
Yeah. Good times.
All right.
What category do you want?
What do we got? Let's do Tracy Lords for 10.
Okay. What genre does the mother actress Tracy Lords, what is she best known for?
Matthew.
Porn.
You got it.
Porn. And some of her porn titles are pretty great. The Sex Goddess. Open Up Tracy. A Story About Virgins.
I thought that says Shart on Dead. But that's not, I don't think that's what it's supposed to say.
What do we have any that are for 30?
We do. Tracy Lords for 30 and Surgery for 30.
Let's do Tracy Lords for 30.
All right. Beyond acting, what is Tracy Lords known for?
I'm going to turn this around.
Okay.
I'm going to say, this movie has Roger Waters playing a priest.
Roger Waters? You mean John Waters?
Yes. What did I say?
Oh, boy. Roger.
Jesus. John Waters playing a priest, which is weird because of his other films that he has done. So my question would be to name three John Waters films.
Oh, this is the wrong question to ask her.
Okay. How about Female Trouble, Pink Flamingos, and... Fuck it, the, let's see, Crybaby.
Oh, shit. All right.
So you get those points.
All right, yeah, that was
do I put myself down here
yeah,
for stuff for 30?
Yep.
Okay, well.
I guess, does that mean she gets to pick the next category in question?
Yeah, he did a ton of films. Multiple Maniacs, you said Pink Flamingos. Serial Mom, Female Trouble,
mm-hmm.
Hairspray, Cecil B. Demented, Eat Your Makeup, yeah, Mondo Trasho.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
It's about a dog that gets into the makeup
stuff. So, we're going with my next question?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, well, this one's going to be easy, because reasons. What director is featured in the movie gave Lords her big break, and you have to name the character that she played in that film?
Oh, you said easy?
Well. It was easier, but then we discussed it, and I was like, damn it. Now, you don't have to necessarily come up with the character name, but, well, actually, you do for the 20.
Oh, man. Oh.
You know the first part.
It's John Waters.
Yep.
And I... shit. I don't know the rest.
You can come up with her first name. I'll give you the points.
The first name of her character?
Yep.
I really don't know it.
No?
No.
Why did you buzz in then?
Because I'm going to have to roll a dice. Yeah. I'm going to roll the shot dice.
Don't roll the shot
dice. I have to.
Oh, Lord.
You know it's going to be awful.
Hold on. Fuck.
Can we just divide by two?
All right. Well, I'll start on those while we go.
He rolled a 3, so you have to be taking 3 shots to get those points.
Yeah.
We'll just continue answering questions
And
see if you can get through these.
Yeah. let's do Surgery for 30.
Okay. So you're going to get the 20 points if you get through all those shots.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Ugh. There's one.
Okay. What is the name of the procedure Pauline attempts at the end of the film?
Lung transplant?
Well, there's a specific name. I looked it up.
Oh, there's a specific name for lung transplant?
It's a...
A pulmonary transplant?
Mm-mm. That's...
Nope. Okay. Nope. Somebody else
it's
have an idea?
It's semi-easy, semi-not easy to come up with. Mm. Yeah. It's kind of obvious. You can use the more technical name, or you can the exact surgery that Pauline was attempting to do on those two girls.
No, I have no idea.
You have lifelines. Both of you.
But, oh, so you used one, you turned one around, too.
We each have them.
Oh, we all each.
Right. I'm rolling the die.
All right, thank you.
We're going to take the points? How does this work?
Well, he's got to roll the die and then take that many shots, and then and he gets then... the points.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, well, get the answer to the last question, did we?
No, what was her character's name?
Wanda.
Oh, shit.
What film was that?
Crybaby.
Yeah. Alright. And what was the answer to this question? Nice, I got a one.
<I'm> so lucky.
Of course.
Now we just have to wait for Cake Wolf to finish his third shot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're almost there. So what's the surgery?
We're almost there. The surgery?
Yeah, what's it
called? Bilateral sequential.
Oh, okay.
I'm gonna make that a big shot.
So
I'm just getting over my stomach bug.
The three are for 20
it's
points.
The first alcohol
three
I've
shots
had.
For 20. Okay. Mm-hmm. And Jason is going to get 30 for that one. For that one shot.
Jesus,
that
fuck.
That seems like a mistake.
Yeah, it was.
Jason is totally kicking your ass at this point with his one shot.
Well, that's the luck of the die.
Stick that die in your brown eye.
You wanted to use a six-sided die.
Yeah. It's insane.
I had to edge you down to a four-sided. Jeez.
Okay. Actually, there was one question beyond acting. What is Lords known for? And then that was turned on me, and I got it, so I got the 30 points. Okay. I'll cross that one out.
Yep.
Okay, we have two questions left.
Thus, Spring, you get to pick.
Oh, what do we got?
Surgery for 10 and Weird Girls for 20.
Weird Girls for 20.
Okay. What fetish is Pauline drawn to?
Is this like a technical term for it?
Pretty sure. I'm just going to go with the most obvious answer.
So blood fetish? Or,
You're speaking out of turn.
Oh.
Your answers do not count. We do not hear you, woman. Matt?
Oh, did you hit first?
No, that was you.
No, that was me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I said blood fetish.
Oh, I got mixed up with your with the demon
thing. Oh, no. The female scream.
Okay.
So, yeah blood fetish. She also has this weird strangulation fetish.
What is that called, though?
It's not called strangulation, asphyxiation fetish?
Blood fetish, kind of.
A hemophilia fetish. People just bleeding out. Okay, he's gonna try and take over.
Is it hemophiliac?
It's called something.
Isn't that
no.
Somebody has that blood no. problem?
Mm.
It's a lot more obvious. It's like you're watching her fantasies. They're not moving. What is that?
Like
She likes them.
Necromancy or necromancy?
Necrophilia.
There we go.
Okay.
I'll give the points to Matt because he really wants them.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that we did that wrong this time.
Just kept buzzing.
Oh, man. So we have one left.
All right.
Surgery for 10.
Okay.
Define excision.
Jesus.
I thought you said these were easy.
I feel like every time I try to answer, I'm like, no, we're looking for something more specific here. Go for it.
I'm going to take a guess and say that it's to remove something, remove an organ.
You got it.
Okay.
And Matt wins. Yay. Not whatever Matt wants.
What, I actually won?
Yes.
Nice.
Did you finish those shots?
Yeah, they were
you're
bad.
Probably going to be sick for, you know, like the next day.
Yeah.
So you're going to be good.
I'm sure it'll be worth it.
Yeah, I get hills of eyes.
So, let's see. 50, oh, he's 70 like already points for Matt. Bad. Christina, 30.
Jason at 50.
How many points did you have, Matt?
70.
Wow.
I got all the 10s, yeah.
And I am at 30, so Matt wins, and Jason pulls up at second place.
All right, well, I guess...
tie for 30.
We will move into our crumbs, and then you'll hear our final thoughts about the film.
Bon appétit!
I think those were pretty good questions. They weren't too easy. They weren't too hard. Some of them were over my head because I don't do well under pressure. but
also,
yeah,
they
were good.
Specific things, but
they were a little on. And some of them just threw me off a bit. They were good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's how they should be, throwing off a little bit there. But yeah, so I guess the next movie we will do is Ginger Snaps, because that was the last one that Kate Bitch got. And then we will do Hills Have Eyes. What did you guys think? Just thumbs up or thumbs down for Excision? We'll start with Kate Bitch.
I'd give it a thumbs up.
Dust Brain?
You found it unsettling.
There's a lot I didn't like about this,
right.
But it's worth it. It's a good movie, I guess.
You give it a thumbs up?
Not quite.
It's halfway. Middle. I don't know if it's thumbs up and thumbs down.
No, you just have to make a decision. Black and white.
Black and white.
All right. Well, I would give it a thumbs up. Miss Dust Bunny?
I would say I would give it a thumbs up with a caveat that it's very much a product of its time of 2012.
Okay.
Which doesn't feel like that long ago.
It doesn't really. I actually thought it was a lot older. Like when we watched Teeth, I thought it was like in that sort of like era.
Yeah, it feels like it would have fit in.
Yeah.
Right alongside Teeth. Like,
well, yeah, that's why I mentioned. Yeah, like when we were going with Teeth, I was like, oh, well, Excision's like, you know, just kind of like that film.
It must have been made the following year.
Yeah.
Well, to get more down into it, Excision is essentially a coming-of-age tale that deconstructs itself as you follow the lead character, Pauline, which is played by Annalyn McCord. You'll know her from, like, 90210. When she had done her casting, the director saw her and instantly said, no, she's way too gorgeous for this role. This is not what I see. but what she brought to the table in her reading actually made an impression on him. And the character itself was meant to be androgynous, which I think did come across in the film. But it was mainly to be an expression of him and his experiences growing up. But it ended up being an amalgamation of both his and Annalyn McCord's. So it became a new beast unto itself once she stepped into the shoes of Pauline. And it became something truly interesting that surprised even the director himself. As the story progresses, basically the deconstructionist tale is showing that Pauline has an obsession with the medical world, and she wants to have this career in medicine, but she's also got a lot of strange desires that are expressed through dream sequences throughout the film, which act as like a contrast with the normal suburban family life that she has, which is a little bit abnormal in how claustrophobic it is, because her parents, kind of mainly her mother, played by Tracy Lords, keeps her very under heel as much as possible and wants her to be this like ideal woman and takes her to cotillion classes and stuff. As it deconstructs enough, the fantasies start bleeding into her reality, and you see that her fantasies are slowly expressing her as a more beautiful and empowering woman until it reaches its crescendo, and we have her essentially performing surgery on her sick sister who has cystic fibrosis.
Spoilers?
Right. Well, I said, you know, watch the movie before you listen. And the sister is really the only one throughout the film that she has a true connection with, sticks up for her, and they have a bond. So it's jarring to see at the end her do this, because really she should know better, and that's a point of contention for the viewer to say whether it's in a realm of reality or not. But
it's a little bit of a metaphor that she's excising, like, also her sister from her life. She's excising, you know, like, you know, her involvement with everything. Like, she's an outsider. She's excised from society, you know. Like,
I didn't even think of it that way,
like,
but yeah.
She's, like, such an outsider in everything she does. She's so delusional that she's just, like, she doesn't even think about anything.
That's actually a good point I didn't think of. But
like, she's not even thinking about medicine. She's just thinking about blood. And that's, like, the only way that she can think of to, you know, like, make it legitimate and, you know, like, make herself feel like she's a smart and capable person is, I'm going into medicine.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not doing any of the work to get there.
Yeah.
So, with me putting that out there, we kind of all know that she has these, like, strange social quirks. Do you think that they were believable?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
I was watching them, I'm like, hey, that's me.
Okay.
Yeah, they
the
were definitely
awkwardness of it.
Believable, because you could empathize with her, what she's gone through. I mean, they make it so that you, if you're an outsider at all, you can, you know, empathize with some of these situations, or you know someone who's kind of like this. And that's where it went wrong with me, because and they're adding humor. There's a lot of humor in this. Like, it was not the way you described it made it sound very, you know, dour. Mm-hmm. But there was humor in it. It was funny.
Yeah.
It was, like, quirky.
Yeah, she cracks a joke about how all teenage girls would be psychopaths or something. Or all teenagers, maybe, she says. But
I feel that there was humor, but more on the black humor scale, where it's subtle.
Oh, yeah,
in its approach.
Yeah. But it downplays what they're trying to go for, which is how delusional she is. You don't get that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You don't get that she's delusional until the very end, when it's like this big shock that she opens up her sister, you know, to try to do this. Like, that's where it becomes unbelievable to me.
Okay. I kind of felt the same way. Like, the journey to the shocking end, there was something off about it. I couldn't put my finger on what it was. I feel like you placed the hammer on the head of the nail there. I couldn't really put the puzzle piece in there. I couldn't figure out why the journey didn't meet the end like it did. But yeah, I can see that. There was just something off for me.
It just felt like the shock at the end was forced.
You had,
they needed to end it somehow.
You had said that there were like a first for there was a true representation of like a strange mind there, quirky individual kind of thing. We've got Andrew Siddick writing in at Andred the Blind from Twitter. He said that it was a disturbing body horror coming of age tale, and that his brain hurts after watching. He thanks all of us for effing him up since he watched it for our show.
Such a compliment.
Gave it an 8 out of 10, and he later goes to mention that he was an awkward teenager, so he enjoys films like this because, in a way, he can connect with them. Dust Bunny, you had said that you were like that. Did you feel like you could connect with this film because of that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like on the whole, like, dreaming of, like, these elaborate suicide girl but gore porn scenarios, collecting dead animals and giving them burials, that was a thing. What else? Like, having really unmanaged eyebrows, that's another thing.
Well, that I can identify with.
Apparently, you know, like, the whole, like, when I was in high school, when I got out, like, the number one thing people would say would, wow, you got hot. I'm like, hey, fuck you? So, that was a thing where, you know, like, wow, apparently I was going to develop into my beauty. I completely, you know, like, if Pauline had a moment, you know, like, you know, about maybe 5 or 6 years later, like, you know, we'd all see, like, her being, like, this gorgeous weirdo.
Yeah.
Maybe with, you know, like,
when
some therapy.
Without the zits.
Yeah, without the zits. That was another thing I had. Not terrible, but enough, like, she did, where it's, like, kind of weird.
Yeah, pox your face.
Yeah.
I do enjoy the film. I watched it twice, once with the audio commentary, once without. There's some really fun stuff with the audio commentary. You really get a sense of the director. He's a down-to-earth kind of guy, very humble. You also get a sense of Annalyn McCord, who's the other voice on the audio commentary track, and she's a mess. Dude, what? She is kind of crazy.
No, she's not really a mess.
Where he's like she's humble and he's trying to like describe what inspired scenes as they go across. She's just breaking in and talking about random stuff that is completely non-related to what he's discussing. And then she's like, oh, yeah, enough about ice cream. let's go back to your film. What were you saying? And he's like, oh, I forgot, but that's okay. you get a sense of their characters. It's kind of a comic routine, but you learn some interesting stuff. He actually is a horror fan, and he put homages in there. They're pretty hidden. But the scene where Pauline's losing her virginity, we've got an homage to Hellraiser there with the imagery of blood on the bed. Mm-hmm. He has throwbacks to Argento when she's imagining herself doing surgery with her little round spectacles. Dario Argento nods. Obviously, John Waters, and we've got the dude from Twin Peaks. I forget his name.
Ray Wise.
And Malcolm McDowell from Clockwork Orange, and Oh Lucky Man, and If, and the Rob Zombie Halloweens. So he kind of put a lot of his love in there. Of course, Tracy Lords. I would suggest listening to that audio commentary. It was pretty good, actually. And what else was I going to say about the audio commentary? There was something else, but it's slipping my mind now.
I can watch it.
Yeah, you can. You can watch it and dig into that. It's good stuff.
I do want to add one thing at the end here, though. Mm-hmm. Everyone said that they could empathize with this character pretty much.
Right.
And to some, like, more than others. But, like, how does it make you feel when the end kicker to the movie is saying that this person is delusional and harmful to others? That's what it's saying.
Yeah.
Like, it gives you that shock at the end that creates the horror to this story, but what is actually telling us about these kinds of people, the message, like...
I don't know that any of us were actually delusional, though.
I definitely was, but...
You were going to be a surgeon one day?
No, I thought I was just going to be an all-powerful god on some level, and everything was just going to work. It was all going to work out.
I feel like that's where you have to suspend disbelief.
Oh, wait, I know. I was going to be an artist when I grew up. That was my delusional thought. I was just going to do paintings in a loft and just wear, like, bib overalls with nothing underneath and shave my head. And you know, like,
but
everything
that's the thing you could do.
That was going to be my life.
It was just not, we're going to starve.
But the thing is, like, I actually did do a lot of painting.
I think that most people that have her issues internalize most of their desires. Where you have to suspend disbelief is there is the chance that someone could come along like her and externalize those thoughts and make them a reality, where their dream just kind of bleeds into the real world. And she is trying to actually get psychological help throughout the film, and no one wants to take her seriously. So she was actively trying to seek out help. She knew she was fucked up, but no one was listening.
I feel like the catalyst was those girls that spray-painted cunt on her garage.
Yeah, I think, like, that helped.
That happened. Then she got expelled. And then the whole idea of, like, a mother who's that overbearing, I think, really did push her over the edge a little bit further into, I have to do something really good right now because my parents' house is trashed.
Yeah.
And I'm expelled from school, and my mom really hates me. She just said she can't love me.
That's actually a really...
I think I need to do something right now to redeem myself.
That's
and
a good
I'm
observation.
I'm going to cut off all my hair. And they didn't make it obvious, but I think she cut off all of her hair so it wouldn't get in the way of surgery.
Yeah.
And so I think that was her trying to redeem herself, and then she realizes at the end, I fucked up even more because I don't know how this life works.
Yeah. No, that's a really strong observation I did not get. But yeah, that works. So yeah, I think we all would recommend this. Some of us with caveats, but when the end of the day is there, I think we all say that it's something that should be watched.
I'd never watch it again, though.
I think it's pretty.
Watch it once.
It's a pretty movie.
Yeah, so I guess we'll go into our write-ins. We got some trivia. So here's some questions from the listeners. We've got a question by...
do you have it written there at the Texas...
Mr. Trump? Martinez. He says, in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre films, the cannibal family is identified throughout the franchises by two different last names. What are they? You guys know this?
I have no idea.
Not two of them, no.
I'm pretty sure it's Sawyers and Hewitts. And I know they changed the first name of Leatherface from... I think it was originally Jediah, I think. I don't know. I think he had three different names, actually, but I can't remember them all. But I think it was Sawyers and Hewitts. So we'll look into that. But we've got another write-in, Mr. Alan Easterling. And he says, the kid that played Sam is Quinn Lord. And he was the kid peeping in on the girls / werewolves during that segment into their while they were changing into their costumes. So that was the answer for his last question. And his next horror trivia question is, what other celebrity was featured in the issue of Penthouse featuring an underage Tracy Lords? Bonus question, how old was Tracy in that pictorial?
Repeat the question?
I have no idea what the answer is, but it's...
What other celebrity was featured in the issue of Penthouse featuring an underage
Vanessa
Tracy
Williams.
Lords?
Are you fucking serious?
I think so. Wow, okay. And George Burns, I think.
And how old was Tracy in that?
I think she was about 16.
Wow, that's scary.
I think that's the answer. Weird answer. But I think I read that like as part of like looking up questions.
Okay.
We'll have to do a little bit of research and find out if we're right later.
Yeah, either way you're getting
Why
some
would
raffle
I mention
tickets.
George Burns? That's the crazy part.
I thought you said George Bush at first. I was like, "Whoa."
No. No, she was
I don't want to see that.
She was like 15 and a half when she actually started. Like her entire backstory is kind of interesting. Like,
yeah.
She was basically like, "I don't want to be poor. My mom fucked up. She's like dating all these drug dealers. By the way, drug dealer, can you help me get some jobs and get a fake birth certificate and get me a fake ID so I can start working?" And then that turned into, "You're going to be a model," turned into, "You're going to be doing porn." And she's like, "I don't want to be poor."
She is awesome. So thanks for checking in with us and sending us some questions, guys. We're going to throw at you, I guess, our goodbyes. Just want to say, if you are interested, you can check my latest release out. I put out a story called Black Chocolate. You can find it on Amazon by searching either my name, Matthew Fishgold, or looking up Black Chocolate in the Kindle store. It's a sci-fi story. It's not horror, but there's some humor in it, if that's something you're into. I'll talk more about it in another episode. We're running pretty tight on time. But basically, people sell their memories to corporations in this alternate universe. And the main character sold his memories of his ex-wife to a candy corporation. So whenever he tries to think of her, he thinks about these chocolate bars. And there's some evil afoot, but he has to try and learn about his past with his ex-wife to solve this strange thing that's going on in the universe. And yeah, it's kind of like a mix between Barbarella and like blaxploitation films. So if that interests you, you can check it out. So I guess we would like to thank our lead sex ed experts, Mons and Pubis, and our resident blood bearer, Dimitri Osis, sorry. Without you, we could not have understood the fickle workings of a teenage girl's sexual urges. Another big thank you to Lucas Seitz, who kept us all from contracting bloodborne bloodlust from the tit fest bathtub scene and for keeping all those whites white. To our makeup artist, R.T. Reese, who turned a hot chick into a hygienically challenged teen with the placement of a few zits and the wrong color foundation. And finally, a shout out to 2007 Brittany for reminding us that crazy can be determined by hair length. The closer the shave, the crazier the dame. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you next time. You can all say goodbye.
Bye-bye. Bye. Yeah. Bye.
Get out. Get out.
Excuse me now.
What is with you guys? How about shutting up for a change, okay? I already fed you.
Beware the moonlets.
Yeah. What the hell was that all about?